The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is 91.3 KUAF, your source for NPR news and NPR programs for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. I'm Kyle Callums. Tomorrow will be observed as Day of Action by many internet activists supporting net neutrality. The University of Arkansas will host a talk about aspects of net neutrality, followed by an open discussion about all facets of the issue. The session is tomorrow at noon in Giffels Auditorium in Old Main on the University of Arkansas campus. Ahead on today's Ozarks at Large, John Brummett, a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, talks about a few items that have been keeping the internet busy the past week: violence in the state capitol, reaction to a proposed health care plan in the Senate, and the just-finished G20 summit. His weekly conversation with Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics begins in about 5 minutes. First, a new study confirms what many people suspected: the arts in Benton and Washington counties are big business. Yesterday, Randy Cohen, Vice President for Research and Policy with Americans for the Arts, disclosed findings from an intensive survey of arts providers, patrons, and attendees around here. Last night, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to offer details about the report that includes this figure: the arts in Northwest Arkansas pumping at least $131 million into the region's annual economy. Randy Cohen says he enjoys the conversation in this region about the relationship between art and the economy.
It's a great conversation. It's a good news conversation. Talking about these very pragmatic aspects of the arts, that the arts improve our economy, that they're good for jobs, good for the economy, that young people with an education rich in the arts are performing better academically, that when the arts are part of our health care, we're healing quicker and have fewer doctor visits and saving the system money. That does nothing to diminish the quality of the arts. You know, conversely, that just shows if you want to build a healthy Northwest Arkansas, invest in the arts. Make sure everyone's got the opportunity to participate and engage in the arts.
Arts and Economic Prosperity 5 examined specifically Benton and Washington County.
Yes.
Those two counties. Mm-hmm. There were 300-plus other communities that have had similar studies, right?
Yes.
Part of the study that was released on Monday kind of stacks up Northwest Arkansas versus, or not versus, but in comparison to similar populated areas. And it's interesting. It seems, it appears, to my looking, that Northwest Arkansas spends more on arts, enjoys the arts more, and gets more financial rewards out of arts other than compared to similar areas.
Yeah, I would say Northwest Arkansas has an awful lot to boast about. Obviously, the people who live in this community have fabulous cultural opportunities. And, you know, obviously our big organizations, Crystal, you know, the museum and, you know, the arts center, as well as our smaller community-based neighborhood arts organizations, our theaters, our dance organizations. It's a lot of cultural richness here. And when you tally up that economic activity, you know, as we are, and how does that stack up against other communities or other regions? Northwest Arkansas and just this two-county area stacks up very strongly against communities of much larger size as well. When you look at the responses from the 23 organizations that were part of this study, and we take a very conservative approach to economic impact. We surveyed 99 organizations. We heard back from 23, the big ones. That's what we go with. So we don't make estimates for non-responding organizations. And we found that those organizations spend $67.5 million every year. We don't think about this as people in the community. We love the arts. They create the communities that we want to live in. They bring us joy and inspiration, and they make us feel creative. But the fact is, arts organizations are businesses, and that's what that study shows us. You know, it's a myth buster. Arts organizations employ people locally. They purchase goods and services in the community. They're members of the Chamber of Commerce. They're involved in marketing and tourism of the region. So arts organizations are good business citizens.
You mentioned jobs. Full-time equivalent jobs related to arts and culture in Northwest Arkansas in 2015, more than 4,600.
Yeah. you know, and you know, if you're a community leader, if you're a legislator, you know, if you're a city council person or a county council person, elected leaders, they've got three priorities in their life: jobs, jobs, and jobs. You know, that's what they're thinking about all the time. And now here we're saying, look, the arts providing obviously cultural benefits, but also driving employment in our communities. These research studies change the conversation about the arts from one of arts as charity to one of arts as industry that provides cultural benefits, everybody acknowledges that, and is good for the economy, jobs, government revenue. One of the other findings, in addition to 4,647 jobs, is local and state governments are pulling $14.3 million in revenue. That's income they use to pay for other critical services.
Randy Cohen is Vice President for Research and Policy with Americans for the Arts and was in Northwest Arkansas yesterday to discuss the findings of a study about the economic impact of the arts in Washington and Benton counties. He was at the Carver Center for Public Radio last night, and we'll hear more from that conversation on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3. Here is a partial post-Independence Day review of the news. The president met with 19 other world leaders in Hamburg at the G20 summit. The Senate work on health care has slowed, and there has been concern about Arkansas's largest city and how it's grappling with high-profile acts of violence. All three subjects are part of the latest conversation between Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, and John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette. The conversation begins with the G20 summit.
Before Trump came along and turned our politics upside down, the performance he had at the G20 would be disastrous and outrageous and a catastrophe for the country and Western civilization or the world. Showed no leadership. You had all these countries moving forward on trade except America's not participating. He had all these countries moving forward on climate control except he's not participating. He tweets that everybody's talking about John Podesta, who I don't think all of them have heard of, and why he didn't turn over his computer to the FBI. His daughter sits in a place of world leadership. I could go on, but then the only thing that seemed to excite him was getting to shake hands with Vladimir Putin. He was anxious to get real chummy with this man who meddled in our elections and is a horrible human being and no friend by any remote stretch of the imagination to our country, and then presumed to talk about a cybersecurity partnership with the country that cyber interfered in our once a sovereign and treasured sovereign American election. So, pre-Trump, that's the worst kind of performance an American president could have had. Today, in the new rules of Trump politics, he put America first and he stood up for America and to heck with the world and good for him, which solidifies his base, which is at the present time all he seems capable of doing, but it becomes his most important thing.
Why would Republican leaders, and you saw some of them on the Sunday talk shows, they were discussing this.
Lindsey Graham,
but
Mark
why would they not take a stronger stand? Is it just power? Is just it's too intoxicating for them?
You know, traditional Republicans took two good shots at Barack Obama with two guys they thought could do it, who could appeal to the center, John McCain and Mitt Romney, and both let them down. They couldn't get it done. They've got all the power now. They love having it. They can't seem to exercise it. They can't seem to get it done, but they love the opportunities that exist now that didn't exist before. Trump won, and so he was a winner, and they like winning. The other thing is everybody's got to concern themselves with their own domestic politics, own local politics, and in many of their districts and in many of their states, Trump is more popular than they are. So they've made their bed or sold their souls, whichever you would like to refer to it. But that's what's being done.
But beyond a Supreme Court justice, there's still not a lot getting done. And let's just focus on the biggie, and that's health care. The Republicans have had seven, almost 8 years to come up with a plan to repeal and replace Obamacare, which they talked about for those 7 or 8 years. And we find that they don't have a plan, and there doesn't seem to be any agreement for a plan, and there doesn't seem to be any consensus building for a plan.
No, losing. Consensus is dwindling, the prospects for it. What, since the Republican takeover and Republican explosion since 2010 in Arkansas and across the nation, what single issue has fueled that more than any other?
It's been the Affordable Care Act.
And what was the Republican promise on that, repeal and replace? I mean, that would be number one.
They ran for that at the quorum court level,
right,
in parts of Arkansas.
And we've had a total upturning of Arkansas politics as a result of that in 6-7 years. John McCain this morning said, let's face it, I don't think it's going to get done. The New York Times had a piece over the weekend that said it's whatever momentum McConnell had for getting a consensus on repeal and replace in the Senate is dwindling. If you start counting up the people who are opposed, senators who are opposed for whatever reason, you've got your conservatives like Cruz and Rand Paul and those, you've got your Medicaid expansion moderates like Portman and
Collins
and Heller in Nevada, and then you've got a Kansas senator, Republican senator, and a North Dakota Republican senator who went home and found that the key economic engines of the rural parts of those rural states are health care clinics, hospitals, and doctors. That's who's doing the hiring, that's who's doing the commerce. And they're all worried about provisions of this bill. If you put them all together, you've got in double digits. They can only spare two. They've got 52 senators. They can only spare two. There are 10, for various reasons or another, that don't seem to be, clearly don't seem to be for the bill at the present time. And if you do something to get Cruz and Paul and Johnson and whoever the other on the right, Mike Lee of Utah, then you lose the more moderate ones worried about Medicaid. I don't see how it gets done, which really creates a big issue because even I, big Obama guy, big Obamacare guy, Obamacare is not working. I mean, it's just partly because the Republicans and the Supreme Court weakened it, but it's not what it needs fixes. And do we have a competent, functional? If the Republicans can't get anything done, do we have a center that can hold in American politics?
A bipartisan fix. Let's talk about violent crime in Little Rock. It's certainly been garnering headlines. We've got some new energy and activity in the potential mayor's race in 2018. But let's start with the crime that we've been reporting on first. Was it worse in the 1990s than it is now?
And what's the point of that question?
Well, I mean, Are we overblowing what is going on here? Did we have a worse situation in the 1990s when there was gang banging in Little Rock versus what's happening now?
Forgive me, Roby. You know I love you, but I don't understand the context of that question. I really don't. Okay. Numerically, in terms of people killed, considerably worse than the 1990s.
Is it a worse situation? Are we in?
Well, so what if it's not as bad? It's bad now. When 28 people get randomly shot in downtown Little Rock in a feud between apparent local gangs with some Memphis intervention at a concert at 2:30 in the morning, and you're on, and it's a miracle that tens of people weren't killed, and when we're on national news for that this happened, and when even before that we had a growing, reemerging human tragedy in sections of Little Rock, with let me remind you, 11 shootings in 10 days before this incident. This was Mark Stodola's, bless his heart, his point. Well, it's not as bad as in the 1990s. Okay, great. Is that our judge? Is that the curve we're grading on?
Well, here's my point. Here's part of my point here, is we did a lot in the 1990s to curtail and curb that. There was a special session on juvenile justice brought forth by Governor Jim Guy Tucker at the time. There was curfews. So there was a lot of action that was taken, and we are not taking any of that action now. So my question in the context was, is it worse now? Should we be doing some more of those things to get a stronger grip on this? We don't seem to be, and the conversation doesn't seem to be heading in that direction. We've got the governor putting a task force together to coordinate some stuff, and I haven't seen a plan from city leadership of getting a grip on this.
We've had
these police.
We've had no discussion of quote zero tolerance policies where you flood the relevant centers of criminal activity, of violent activity, with constant overpowering police presence. The current police chief, Mr. Buckner, I've heard him tell the city board those are counterproductive policies. He believes that when you go into a neighborhood so afflicted and you treat it with that kind of oppressive police presence and you stop people for everything, like an expired tag or a muffler that's too loud, you do more public relations harm. Human relations harm than you do good. So I think that's a factor here. But I think we're to the point where we have to recommit ourselves to longer term solutions and get honest about the divisions in our community. But yeah, it's time for some simple, stronger police presence.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and he talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can also read John Brummett's columns, including an online exclusive column on Wednesdays at ArkansasOnline.com. And you can find a podcast devoted to Arkansas news, business, and politics every weekday afternoon at TalkBusiness.net. And just ahead on today's Ozarks, we conclude our conversation with John Hudak about the journey marijuana has taken over the past several decades.
Richard Nixon began a process of ramping up the war on drugs in a very significant way. And in my book, Marijuana, A Short History, I talk a bit about Nixon's private words that you hear on White House taping, as well as his public statements, where he is using war rhetoric. It would not be clear, if taken out of context, whether he was talking about the Soviet Union or whether he was talking about marijuana.
As Arkansas nears the launch of legal medical marijuana, a look back at the substance's history in the United States. That's just ahead on the show.
I'm Robin Young. Here now, resident chef Kathy Gunst has recipes exclusively for her favorite herb, basil.
It smells like summer, right?
Yeah.
It's just like you feel the warmth of the sun on you. You can hear the waves at the beach. It's just everything good about summer.
That's next time, here and now.
Later today from 1 to 3 on 91.3. The National Weather Service counts 9 weather events in the United States causing at least $1 billion in damage during the first half of 2017. That's the second most on record for the first half of any year, trailing the 10 such events from January to June in both 2011 and 2016. The list for this year includes a freeze, 6 severe storms or tornado outbreaks, and 2 floods, including the spring floods that hit Arkansas and Missouri. The first 6 months were also the second warmest first half of a year in recorded history. The local forecast indicates calm for us. Tonight, clear conditions with lows from 72 to 74. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the lower 90s in northwest Arkansas and around 95 in the Arkansas River Valley. Heat index values in the River Valley tomorrow expected to reach near 103. There are slight chances of rain in the extended forecast for Thursday night through Sunday afternoon. It can be a summer puzzle. You'd like to enjoy an adult beverage to take advantage of the summer state of mind, but you don't want to just imbibe. You want to keep the mind and body active. We have possible answers to this puzzle. Tonight, the latest edition of Books and Brews will take beer and add literary conversation. The monthly event is a partnership between the Fayetteville Public Library and Core Public House on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville. Tonight's discussion will revolve around the book Walden on Wheels, a writer's ambitious mission to get out of debt by following the examples of Henry David Thoreau. So you might not have time to read the book by tonight's session, but you can always keep an eye on the Core Public House Fayetteville Facebook page or faylib.org, the Fayetteville Public Library website, faylib.org, for details about the next Books and Brews gatherings. If your beer doesn't pair well with Thoreau, Walden, or discussions of personal debt, there are opportunities to raise a pint while considering the eventual king of all of Westeros or impressing others with your knowledge of the lineup of the second incarnation of the Avengers. Local breweries offer trivia nights, sometimes very specific trivia nights, almost every evening of the week. Tonight at 7, Puritan Coffee and Beer on Dixon Street in Fayetteville will host superhero trivia. Two rounds of questions could lead to prizes and drink specials. New Province Brewing Company on West Hudson Road in Rogers will sponsor a Game of Thrones trivia night tomorrow night at 7. If contests are not quite the mindfulness you're seeking, there is yoga and wine every Tuesday night at Sassafras Springs Vineyard in Springdale. Each week, the session, hosted by Yoga Gypsy, begins at 6:30 at Sassafras on Guy Terry Road. Cost is $10. You can find out more at the Yoga Gypsy Facebook page. And then there is the centuries-old combination of wine and music. Tomorrow night's Wine Down Wednesday at the Tawnytown Winery features Troy Edwards, and the music begins tomorrow night at 6:30 at the winery on Barrington Road. Non-alcoholic drinks, cheeses, and hummus will also be available.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Botanical Garden of the Ozarks presents Tyson Foods Tuesday nights. The garden, located on North Crossover in Fayetteville, is open and free to the public each Tuesday evening from 5 until 8 p.m. through August. A schedule of Tuesday night entertainment and demonstrations is available online at bgozarks.org.
In November, Arkansas voters approved a medical marijuana amendment. Friday, the state began accepting license applications for marijuana businesses. As part of Arkansas Public Media's continuing coverage of the cannabis rollout, APM's Bobby Apazon spoke with John Hudak, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and the author of Marijuana, A Short History. In the second part of the interview, we pick up with the counterculture movement of the 1960s, the baby boomers, and President Richard Nixon's crackdown on pot in the war on drugs.
You know, the culture in the 60s, you would have thought that marijuana would have been ascendant following the 60s and early 70s. But in fact, it seemed to be driven underground. Is that largely because of President Richard Nixon's war on drugs and kind of the fallout of that, that by the 80s, we have this picture of marijuana as very dangerous and very criminal?
Yeah, Richard Nixon began a process of ramping up the war on drugs in a very significant way. And in my book, Marijuana, A Short History, I talk a bit about Nixon's private words that you hear on White House taping, as well as his public statements, where he is using war rhetoric. It would not be clear, if taken out of context, whether he was talking about the Soviet Union or whether he was talking about marijuana. That's the type of rhetoric he was using. And he was successful in getting the Controlled Substances Act passed. He saw the criminalization and demonization of marijuana and its users as a political strategy to advance his own electoral goals. And it did not stop with Nixon. President Ford picked up the torch. And even President Carter, who was seen as more of a reformer on these issues because of a variety of political factors, ended up also being tough on drugs. And then, of course, in the 1980 election, Carter is beaten by Reagan, and Reagan is a true, devout, and avowed drug warrior who continued this government-run effort to change the minds of Americans and turn them, or to continue to turn them, against marijuana and marijuana users.
As you discuss in Marijuana, A Short History, between 1990 and the present, which is roughly a generation, we've seen an absolute sea change in public polling on the issue of marijuana acceptance.
That's correct. So in 1990, support for marijuana was hovering around 20%, which was really as low as it had been throughout most of Gallup's asking about it. And this is, again, for recreational use. By the mid-2010s, you see an increase of about 40%, 40 percentage points. You see a tripling of support up to about 60%. And that sea change, when you really break down the numbers in the public opinion polls, you're seeing two things going on. One is that there is generational turnover. That is, the people who like marijuana reform the least tend to be the oldest in society. And so as they die off, they are being replaced by young people, people turning 18, entering the electorate, with the highest levels of support. And so that generational change can explain some of that, but not all of the change. Something else is happening too, and that is that people are changing their minds on marijuana.
Yeah, without question, the most interesting polling change is within the baby boomer cohort. I mean, this is a generation that made marijuana cool, and yet they were polling in 1990 sub 20%.
Yeah, I think one of the important things to caution about when thinking about the baby boomer generation is that they are often characterized as a bunch of hippies smoking weed and having sex. In reality, marijuana use always was and continues to be something that is done by a small percentage of the population. And while that characterization of baby boomers as the people who just really loved pot is certainly true of some of them, the vast majority of baby boomers were not marijuana users.
All right. Thank you, John.
Take care.
That was John Hudak, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and author of Marijuana, A Short History. If you're interested in listening to the first part of that interview or the entire interview, you can go to arkansaspublicmedia.org. Arkansas Public Media is a statewide reporting project funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public radio stations across Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Polls are open until 7:30 tonight for three special elections in Northwest Arkansas. Among the issues to be decided, if the small town of Avoca in the northern half of Benton County will be able to sell liquor on Sundays. Voting in the town of about 500 people takes place today at the town hall. If the measure is approved, Avoca will join Springdale, Eureka Springs, and Taneytown as the only cities in Northwest Arkansas permitted to sell liquor on Sunday. The Arkansas Lottery is coming in over projections for revenue for the just completed fiscal year. The report, released by the Arkansas Legislature's Lottery Oversight Committee, indicates the lottery made just over $85 million for the 12 months ending June 30th. That's about $5 million more than the projected amount the lottery would raise during the fiscal year. Home sales in the Fort Smith metro area are down for the latest monthly report, but remain up for the year. Talk Business and Politics reports the home sales for Sebastian and Crawford counties last month were off by about 5.5% compared to the same month last year. However, for the first 6 months of 2017, sales in the region are up nearly 6% compared to the first 6 months of 2016. A few more Arkansas school children hit the state's proficiency level in standardized testing this year compared to last. Arkansas Public Media's Sarah Weitz-Kotacek has the details.
Data show that Arkansas students do best on the English portion of the state assessment, the ACT Aspire exam. Across a 3rd through 10th grade, students tested an average of nearly 70% of students met state benchmark college and career readiness standards in English, but only about 46% did in math and 40% in science. In a press release, the department said an overall jump in scores from last year could be because students had more time for the writing section this year. They were also more familiar with the online testing format. This is the state's second year proffering the ACT Aspire. It's required by law to gauge students' skill level, evaluate schools, and make comparisons with other states. Education Commissioner Johnny Key implemented the test in 2015 after 1 year of using the PARC exam. That was despite the State Board of Education's disapproval of the change. Sarah Weitz-Kotacek, Arkansas Public Media.
A couple of blocks of a downtown street in Bentonville will require a detour the rest of this week. Northeast B, between Northeast 3rd and Northeast 5th, is closed until Friday evening at 5 for utility work. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals don't play today after concluding a Texas road trip yesterday afternoon in San Antonio. The Nats lost yesterday 2-0. Up next, a return to Arvest Ballpark in Springdale tomorrow night for a game against Tulsa.
On the next Fresh Air, why was only one corporate executive convicted after the financial meltdown of 2008? We talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning ProPublica reporter Jesse Eisinger. His new book is about why the Justice Department fails to prosecute executives. And we'll talk about the Trump administration's business policies and how they contradict his populist rhetoric. Join us.
Fresh Air can be heard at 11 every weekday morning and again at 6 p.m. every weeknight on 91.3. The Arkansas definition of city is pretty broad. Any place with at least 500 residents is either a first-class or second-class city. And every county seat must be a first- or second-class city, so Jasper, population 460-some, also fits the definition. In all, there are more than 500 cities in the state, and though the challenges and concerns likely vary by population and geography, the cities do have a unifying organization, the Arkansas Municipal League. The new president of the league is Doug Sprouse, who happens to also be the mayor of Springdale. He recently came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk to Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek about his term that has just started and some of the issues facing Arkansas cities in the near future.
So what are the benefits? Tell me a little bit about, you know, what the league does.
Sure. The league is plays a lobbyist role, representing the interests of our cities. And really, our cities are really the residents of our cities, ultimately, when legislation comes forward. So we're either down there fighting for something or against something, depending on what the issue is. But the league also, for the member cities, has several benefits and that cities can participate in, whether it's health insurance, vehicle insurance, property insurance, legal defense fund. Springdale participates in most of those, not all. It's a cafeteria. You pick what you want to and pay for what you want to participate in.
So in Washington, D.C., U.S. senators and representatives and the governors lobby for their states. So in this case, the Municipal League is kind of like a smaller version of that, in that you lobby and hope to have some influence with the governor on issues that matter to you guys.
Well, I hope so. Governor Hutchison and Governor Beebe before him, who are the two governors in my experience with the league, have both been very receptive to the support and to input on issues from the Municipal League. Our state reps and state senators also, you know, we weigh in every piece of legislation, pretty much every piece of legislation that is proposed. Once it gets to a certain stage, if it's something the league wants to take action on, either to work to support or work to oppose, that runs through the executive committee of the league, and then ultimately the whole league decides their positions on the league's positions on different various legislation.
An issue at hand right now is mm-hmm. the internet sales tax.
Yes,
and a lot of cities have come out, you know, hoping uh-huh. that the governor would take it up again.
Right.
Springdale being one of them. Did the
right.
city council end up approving
a resolution?
Yeah,
the resolution to support collection of Arkansas sales tax online will be before the council next Tuesday night.
Okay.
So some cities have already passed. All cities are being asked to. That's a real strong priority on the part of the league. And that's, you know, that's going to be one of the main issues. If we can get the governor, the governor has indicated that he might be open to calling a special session At least that's what I'm hearing. I've not heard that directly from the governor. But if there seems to be enough support out there among the cities, I think we have a better stand a better chance of getting that done.
And that is what the cities and the municipal league would like, correct?
Is yes.
To see a special session. Yes. So just walk me back a little bit. This did come up this legislative session. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell me a little bit what happened with that?
Well, it was strongly supported by the league. It was strongly supported by retailers and retail associations around the state, because it's really, you know, it's a revenue issue, but even more than that, it's a fairness issue to our brick and mortar stores, our mom and pop stores that are here, you know, and that actually invest in our cities, and Walmart supports it. And so it's not just the small brick and mortar. It's the importance of the online sales tax. First of all, let me say, you know, when I talk about this, I get a lot of blowback from people that say, we don't want any more new taxes.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's not really that.
It's not a new tax at all. We owe it right now. If someone makes an online purchase and sales tax and that whatever that entity they're buying from does not collect sales tax for the state of Arkansas, then you're supposed to keep track of that and enter it in your income tax when you do your state income tax. I could probably count on one hand the number of people across the state of Arkansas that actually do that
supposed to. I was going to say, I wonder how many people even know that.
so it is not a new tax. It is a tax that's due, and all we're asking is that the state require those online businesses that sell in Arkansas to collect that tax, just like our local businesses have to collect it. And submit it to the state.
And did that, gosh, I might have to jog my memory. Did mm-hmm. that legislation end up failing?
It failed. It was 7 votes short. I think it sort of got held up. I don't know that it was on purpose, but there were those that were against it that, you know, maybe they took a no-tax pledge, or some had constitutional questions about it. And I think it got held up till the last, and they're just really by the time, I think it was voted on the day before the session ended, so there really just wasn't time to try and fix it and get more people on board. The people our legislators really need to hear from, because it can be self-serving, it can sound self-serving for a city mm-hmm. to say, you know, we need more tax revenue. It's not, but it can sound that way.
Although that is how most
cities
are funded.
We're not like, we can't print more money when we need it.
Yeah.
We've got to get by on what we've got.
I can't print more money either.
No,
when I need
that's
it.
Right. I think probably the biggest thing to help us move the needle are our local residents and local business owners to let their legislators know that this is important to them, that this is a fairness issue that's important to them. And I hope they'll do that, because that's sort of been the missing – they're not hearing that message as much as they need to.
And, you know, other states are doing it mm-hmm. already. Amazon, I think, has agreed to do it.
Amazon voluntarily, when they saw all the legislation that was being worked on, I think they just sort of figured, well, this is going to happen, and we collect for other states, we might as well start collecting for Arkansas. I'm not trying to read their minds, but that sure seemed to be the case. And so March 1st, they began collecting. Now, it's not on everything that's sold through Amazon, but it's everything that Amazon sells. You know, they'll sell several things that are not necessarily theirs. But everything Amazon sells, they now charge sales tax on, and the state's seen a difference already just by Amazon collecting.
Really?
That first month that Amazon collected, sales tax receipts statewide were up 7.2%.
Wow.
Springdale was up 16% that month. Now, all of that wasn't due to, I mean, our sales taxes have been going up anyway, our collections,
yeah.
As most of Northwest Arkansas does, because of the growth. But we could tell a difference when Amazon started collecting. So it just, you know, sales taxes, I've said this before, sales taxes are the lifeblood of a city finance.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say.
That's how we pay our folks, and that's how we get, get things done and return services to our residents. So the nature of retail has been changing. I mean, more and more is bought online and over the internet, and if we don't get a handle on a way to collect the sales taxes due already, then our ability to provide services is going to start to suffer. And so it's important that we get a handle on this. I mentioned constitutionality, and there were some concerns mm-hmm. by some of our legislators, especially our local ones, about the constitutionality. There was, I think back in the early 90s, there was a decision handed down by the Supreme Court called the Quill decision. But it was dealing, I mean, it was a lot different in the early 90s. I mean,
Definitely, they were dealing, different.
Right. It was an issue over mail order.
Okay.
And could a state force an out-of-state entity to collect sales tax for things that originated outside the state and were delivered in the state? Times have changed a lot since then, and I know that Neil Gorsuch, our newest Supreme Court justice, has said in the past that he believed Quill needed to be revisited. So I'm confident that if the Supreme Court will take this up, because there is a case right now, I think out of South Dakota, either South Dakota or North Dakota, where this is being challenged again. And if the Supreme Court, I think when the Supreme Court will take this up, then this is all going to become a moot issue, and
right.
and sales taxes are going to be collected
across the country.
Across the country. But until then, we would like for our legislature to go ahead and start collecting, as many states are.
So I'm going to switch gears on you
okay.
completely.
Switch gears completely.
But it does have to do with the Municipal League.
Okay.
And this is coming from Kyle Kellams.
Okay.
He asked me, this is a question for him. He said that a Municipal League member told him that you know all the words to every 50s Western.
You know, I grew up, I'm 60 years old. and I got a, I've got a talent that nobody really cares about, and that's that, you know.
Those are the best kind, though.
Yeah. I grew up watching Westerns in the late 50s and yeah. through the 60s. And for those of you who weren't around then, I mean, every night there were two or three Westerns on. I mean, it was just, you know, the big deal. And so I'm pretty good. I've got a little thing I do called Stump the Mayor. And, you know, not a lot of people – as I say, if you weren't around in the 50s and 60s, it doesn't mean a lot to you. But the Senior Center loves it. I do great at the Senior Center. They love it there. And but yeah, I can either not all the songs had words, but theme songs. But I can either sing the tune or the words of whatever Western 50s and 60s Western anybody throws at me.
That's so
funny.
So
there you go. So the challenge is out there.
The challenge is out there. So which one's your favorite?
Oh. You know, I really liked The Rifleman, Chuck Connors. I liked Paladin. I watched Gunsmoke a lot, Bonanza, but they weren't my favorites. Yeah, I really liked I liked Paladin a lot because it was kind of different. You know, he was a different kind. He's almost like a secret agent.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by our studio.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Doug Sprouse is the mayor of Springdale and the president of the Arkansas Municipal League. He talked with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek last week.
We chased Lady Luck till we finally struck Bonanza. With a gun and a rope and a hat full of hope, we planted our family tree. We got a hold of a pot full of gold, Bonanza. With a horse and a saddle and a ring full of cattle, how rich can a fella be? On this land we put our brand, how trite is the name. Fortune smiled the day we piled the Ponderosa claim. Here in the West, we're living in the best Bonanza.
Yes, there are words to the Bonanza theme. That's Lauren Green. Later tonight on 91.3 KUAF, our in-house two-hour program of classical music and arts discussion, Of Note with Katie Hendrickson, will feature music from Franz Liszt, Frédéric Chopin, and more. Of Note, every Sunday through Thursday night from 8 to 10 on 91.3.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society presents the 19th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. Kansas City jazz vocalist Lisa Henry and the Claudia Burson Quartet will open the season Saturday, July 29th, and jazz guitarist Alex Wentz and his trio performs Six Strings, Six Stories, Tracing the Lineage of the Jazz Guitar, August 19th. KUAF.com or digjazz.com for tickets.
And a Fayetteville writer is the winner of this year's Porter Prize. Novelist and playwright Padma Viswanathan was announced this morning as the winner and is being recognized for her substantial and impressive body of work that merits enhanced recognition. The Porter Prize, established in 1984, is given annually to an Arkansas-based writer. Padma's work includes her first novel, The Toss of a Lemon, and was a finalist for the Commonwealth First Book Prize and the Penn Center USA Fiction Prize. In May 2015, she came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about her then new novel, The Ever After of Ashwan Rao. The work mixes fact, a 1985 Air India bombing, and fiction, the title character's attempts to deal with the loss of three relatives in the disaster. In our conversation 2 years ago, Padma explained her main character is a therapist who uses a type of therapy called narrative therapy, a therapy that uses, like writers, storytelling.
Ashwin is a Canadian-trained Indian psychologist. He first comes to Canada in 2003 to witness the start of the trial, but realizes almost instantly that he actually has no interest in the outcome of the trial. It's not going to change anything in his own life. It's not going to bring back his sister and her two children, who are really the children of his life. And so he looks around and wonders about all these people like him. People who lost in this tragedy. And he decides that, yes, he's going to interview them and write a book. He's not only a psychologist, but also a writer. And he has several previous books. And all of this is my invention. Yes.
Sure.
I mean, the trial itself, the disaster, those are all from history. But Ashwin is my character. Narrative therapy. It is a branch of psychology. This is Ashwin's specialty. Different people will tell you different things about it. Some people thought that I made it up. I didn't.
I did Google it to see whether you did or not, and you didn't.
Good. No, I didn't make it up. Yeah, I guess in its most basic form, it has to do with the telling of a life as a narrative, externalizing it with a therapist and with a community, such that then it no longer seems inevitable. It seems like something malleable and under the control of the person who is experiencing it. Because I think many people, and this is the theory behind this, is many people feel as though their lives run on tracks that they themselves have not set. And so narrative therapy in telling stories aloud, in telling alternatives to those stories that the subject, him or herself, might invent, might create, might shape, that this is how therapy can work.
It's an interesting vehicle for Ashwin when he meets some of these people. And then, of course, he becomes very fond of some people in British Columbia who either lost loved ones or, well, they all lost loved ones, whether they were blood related or not.
Right.
And it's an interesting vehicle that you use for him to become more familiar with these people who are touched by this tragedy.
Yes. Now, he is, in the book, not supposed to be doing therapy with these people. He's doing a research project for which he's interviewing them and collecting their stories. And his question is how people cope with such a mass tragedy. So he decides to interview these 12 families across Canada. But you're right, you don't get to hear very much about all the others. What you hear about is this one family that he, in British Columbia, and invented a town that I made up in BC, but it's based very closely on the town where I was born, actually. He kind of falls in love with them, mm-hmm. and tells you, the reader, their stories, and in the process of this has to reveal his own, both to you and somewhat to them.
Yeah, you're right, and it's research, but I saw it or read it as therapeutic. They're telling stories. I mean, he's interacting with them, and over time, it seems, if not specifically therapy, it seems therapeutic.
It's an excellent point, really, and I think that's another aspect of narrative therapy that Ashwin himself comes to recognize, that often, and I think it's recognized very broadly. I mean, what happens when you feel badly about something, whether it's something that's been done to you or something you yourself have done? That's the whole point, right, of confession, it's expiation. And what is confession but telling a story, right? And so these people do come to feel that they can unburden themselves to him.
Padma Viswanathan talking to Ozarks at Large in May 2015 about her novel, The Ever After of Ashwin Rao. This morning, it was announced she is the winner of the 2017 Porter Prize.
Many people with serious mental illness get help from peer counselors, people who face mental health struggles of their own.
Peers are often the ones who can actually connect fastest with people and encourage them to get the treatment and the services they need.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story and the latest on healthcare legislation in the Senate this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Boston Mountain Rural Health Center offers discounted medical, dental, and mental health services for residents in rural counties like Searcy, Van Buren, Madison, Newton, and Carroll. And tomorrow, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports the Federally Qualified Health Center recently opened a new clinic in Holiday Island. That and much more on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3. You can also follow us as an absolutely free podcast by subscribing through services like iTunes and Stitchers. Stitcher, you can also go to KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com to find past editions and episodes of our show. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Elkins. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending time with us. We're going to end this edition of Ozarks at Large with music from the absolutely amazing John Moreland. He's at George's Majestic Lounge tonight. It's an ages 18 and up show. Doors open at 7. He's been on Ozarks at Large a couple of times, including as part of our live Friday broadcast during the Roots Festival. This is John Moreland performing Hang Me in the Tulsa County Stars, as heard on Ozarks at Large a couple of years ago during a Roots Festival Ozarks at Large live broadcast. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
I don't want to come back down to earth. My heart is going heavy from the ever-endless hurt. So I don't want to come back down to earth. And babe, I know this life will make you cold and drive you mad, leave you homesick for a home you never had, burning out the good with all the bad. So darling, let the charmers lean the room. They're drowning out the Nashville moon. I want to learn exactly who you are. Then hang me in the Tulsa County Stars. Find me in the Indian Nation sky. You can find me in the Indian Nation sky. When it feels like nothing's real and no one's standing on your side, just find me in the Indian Nation sky. And I'd set ablaze the secrets I conceal. I'd set ablaze the secrets we conceal. If I could make you feel the way you make me feel, I'd set ablaze the secrets we conceal. Babe, I know this world will have the wolves outside your door, make you leave all that you love to fight a war, and never tell you what you're dying for. So darling, let the charmers lean the room. And let them have that Nashville moon. I wanna know exactly who you are. Then hang me in the Tulsa County Stars. Just hang me in the Tulsa County Stars.